In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to
It is time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn here on a Monday afternoon downtown. We're joined by Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Hello there, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
Doing very well, thanks. How's your Monday?
Oh, not too bad, not too bad. I could stand for a little bit more of that weekend weather. I don't know exactly what's going on, but, I mean, frankly, it just seems rather apropos considering how 2020's gone so far. I'm assuming, hey, maybe it's the year without a summer. Who the hell knows?
I was in shorts Saturday. We had my winter coat and gloves on this morning. So, yeah, welcome to Maine.
Oh man, making the move to shorts is such a glorious thing, and then having to move back is just so terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what did you do for fun this weekend? A little work around the house?
Yeah, we did some stuff. I got out, did some clearing of leaves and limbs and whatnot with the city getting ready to do their annual gathering of such things. So I was out. Took my new leaf blower out for a trial run. That was kind of fun.
Nice.
My big sort of project for the weekend. My wife Sheridan got me a membership in to a website called Flaviar, which is a booze club of sorts.
Mm.
And one of the things that they're doing, they annually do a collaboration with the Whistlepig whiskey distillery.
Yeah.
But because of the current circumstances, they weren't able to do it the way they traditionally do it. And so they outsourced the blending to their members. And so I got this beautiful like little kit with all these various tiny vials of whiskey. And like a beaker and like a little pipette, and they basically walk you through the logistics of creating your own whiskey blends, and they basically have you go through and you create your favorite, and then you submit it through their website, and then they judge them, and then they have a sort of simultaneous like blending sort of video event, a live video event where they pick three finalists. And we all blend them together, and we vote, and then they produce and bottle the winner. So that was my big project for the weekend. And you know what? There are worse ways to spend a couple of days.
Please, Alan, tell me that as you were working on this project, there was just lots of maniacal, mad scientist laughter going on.
Well, I mean, you can't do it without the cackle, Kerry. Like, that's part of the process.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was super fun, and the best part about it was like free of charge to all Flaviar members. So it was like I got, you know, this beautiful thing, and I had this wonderful activity to keep me busy for the weekend, and the finals are tomorrow evening starting at 8. So I'm crossing my fingers that my blend makes the cut, but who knows.
Nice. Do you have a title for it?
Oh no, nothing yet. Nothing yet. Because they're producing the winner, and so it's like they're going to bottle and do the whole thing. And so, like I told Sheridan, I'm like, so you realize that I participated, so I clearly have to get this bottle when it comes out.
Well, yes.
we'll see when the price tag comes along. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, like it was just a really cool sort of experience, something
nice
that I never would have thought I would have had an opportunity to do, and it was just sort of dropped into my lap. So so my weekend was pretty good.
I like that.
Well, long story short,
we wish you good luck with that. Let's talk about some of the movies that you got to see over the weekend. You saw three. Where would you like to begin?
Let's talk about them in the order in which I viewed them. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it.
Okay.
Because again, there's no real way to like, because they're three very different films. But we'll start with a movie called The Willoughbys, which actually dropped on Netflix. They usually drop their new originals on Fridays, but this one actually dropped last Wednesday, and so I watched that one first. It's an animated film. based on the novel of the same name by Lois Lowry, best known as the writer of The Giver, among many other wonderful young adult titles.
And a Maine resident.
That's right. And yeah, it was really a lot of fun. Like, it's a very brightly colored, visually distinct, very goofy and silly kind of movie with some darker elements. And one of the things that I think we forget when we look at sort of stories aimed at children, there's a lot of dark stuff in there. There always has been, like from the Brothers Grimm on down. Like, things have always been, there's always been that element of darkness to it. But you don't necessarily expect it to be so present sometimes. And the Willoughbys definitely embraces that dark element in a couple of interesting and I thought kind of fun ways. The basic gist is you've got the Willoughby family. It's a family. They're a proud family. They've got a noble history. Generations of great men and women, you know, explorers and statesmen with magnificent mustaches and the whole shebang. But the current iteration of the family doesn't quite live up to that. To that reputation, to the sort of history of the family. You've got a father and a mother who are never named. They're just father and mother, voiced by, and we'll get into the how stacked this voice cast is as we go. But yeah, the father and mother are voiced by Martin Short and Jane Krakowski, respectively. They're wrapped up in their own sort of selfishness, so they basically neglect and like actively scorn their children. Which, again, is sort of traditional fare in these sort of kid stories. You've got a young lady named Jane, who's voiced by a pop singer named Alicia Cara. I'd never heard of her, but she's actually apparently quite famous. And then
she's Canadian, right?
Yeah, she's a Canadian singer. And this the animation company Braun Animation that produced this film, they're also a Canadian company. So there are actually a couple of Canadian connections throughout here. You've got two little boy twin weirdos, both named Barnaby. So there's Barnaby and Barnaby, voiced by a guy named Sean Cullen. He's a prolific voice actor. And then there's the eldest son, Tim, who's sort of the erstwhile leader of the kids, voiced by Will Forte. So, yeah. So, I mean, just a tremendous voice cast going in. They're miserable. Like, their parents kind of hate them, and they're trying their best to just get by. But their lives change when a baby is left on their doorstep. And so the Willoughby children go out and try to seek and find a home for this orphaned infant. They ultimately wind up taking it to, of all places, a candy factory and leaving it on in the care of the director of said factory, a gentleman by the name of Commander Melinoff, voiced by Terry Crews.
Nice.
And they see how what a wonderful life this orphaned baby is about to have for itself, and they're like, man, wouldn't it be great if we were orphans too? And and that's where we venture into some of the darkness as far as this film is concerned, because again, like, the ill-fated parents trope is very common in kids' movies, but you don't often get the added element of the kids actively participating in their own sort of orphaning.
Right.
They come up with this ridiculous plan to send their parents on a wildly dangerous round-the-world sort of journey. And they think, all right, we're going to be orphaned and we can go find our own family. But it turns out their parents have hired a very cheap nanny to look after them while they're gone. The nanny voiced by Maya Rudolph, who's also in this movie. Yeah, the Willoughby kids are skeptical, but the nanny turns out to be kind of great and wins them over. Circumstances quickly spiral out of control, and a lot of poorly considered decisions put the kids in real danger of being not just without parents, but without each other. And so they're going to need to come up with a really crazy scheme that involves the talents of every child for there to have any chance for their odd little family to have a happily ever after. So yeah, no, it gets dark in a couple of places. Mm. But I will say it's super fun. Like, it's like the animation. It's a really unique sort of aesthetic. Like, it doesn't quite look like any other animated movie that you've seen before. And again, like, the voice cast is phenomenal, and they're all clearly having a fantastic time. It's difficult because, again, those moments, it does get a little intense in a couple of places, and so very young viewers might struggle with those parts. But if you've got a kid who, you know, who's comfortable in the realm of the Brothers Grimm and those sorts of stories, they're going to have a lot of fun with this. Like, it gets over the top and some subverted expectations, some good sight gags, a couple of good jokes, maintains a level of age appropriateness that I think is important. But yeah, it's again, as far as animated family movies go, you could do a lot worse. And again, like, your mileage may vary. If your kids are maybe a little overly sensitive, maybe steer clear just because of some of the dark parts. But for the most part, it's a heck of a lot of fun.
All right. Well, that's the story on the first of three, The Willoughbys. What's next?
So I watched there's this movie, Extraction. It's an action movie, also on Netflix, starring Chris Hemsworth. And it's, like, I'm not going to go so far as to say its title could have been generic action movie, but it's one of those movies that is very much aware of what works with action movies and is unapologetic in its embracing of those ideas without worrying too much about the other stuff. So the end result is a movie where the story's a little thin and doesn't necessarily always make a ton of sense. But it's a first-time director named Sam Hargrave, but he's like a 20-year vet of the stunt industry, so he's like a longtime stunt coordinator and stunt choreographer. And the screenplay is written by Joe Russo of the Russo Brothers. And it's the action sequences in this movie are exceptional. Like, whether we're talking about car chases or the gunfights or the hand-to-hand combat stuff, like, all that stuff is killer. Like, it's really, really good, including a sort of you got to see it to believe it kind of 12-ish minute single cut sort of sequence that basically takes you all up and down through the you know, from cars to guns to fists and back again and just all this stuff. You've got a really strong lead performer in Chris Hemsworth, who has, you know, he's put down Thor's hammer, but not been too far from the stuff that he's clearly comfortable with. And I think that works because, you know, he's got a real presence that works in a movie like this. The plot, such as it is, Hemsworth plays the awesomely named Tyler Rake, who is a former Special Forces soldier who's now a mercenary, who's living in Australia and haunted by the tragedies of his past. So now he spends his time selling his skills to the highest bidder, you know, that whole thing. but he's pulled in to rescue a kidnap victim. So the extraction of the title is he needs to rescue a young man named Ovi, played by a young man named Rutkarsh Jaiswal. Who's the son of India's, like, biggest drug dealer, and the drug dealer is currently in prison. His dad has tasked him, he's got this henchman named Saju, played by a guy named Randy Huda, who has been tasked with securing Ovi's return because the boy has been kidnapped by another, like, a rival drug dealer. This one's the biggest drug dealer in Bangladesh, who's a guy named Amir Asif. Played by Priyanshu Pandey. So Chris Hemsworth, Tyler Rake, such an awesome name, Tyler Rake, gets sort of recruited to join a team to rescue this kid from the city of Dhaka. And so he goes in, and things are going according to plan. He pulls the kid out from the guys who are holding him hostage by just killing the crap out of just a bunch of dudes in a very graphic and, I'll admit, gratifying kind of way. But wouldn't you know it, Rich, not at all is what it seems, and he's betrayed.
Oh.
There's betrayal, Rich.
No.
And so all of a sudden, Tyler Rake is on his own in hostile territory, and it's up to him and him alone to keep the young boy alive and find a way out of the city, despite the fact that the city has its police forces are completely and utterly under the drug dealer's complete control. And so it really is him against the world. And also, there are others, Rich. There are others who need the young man to fulfill their own agenda. And so it's a battle for every inch of progress with him with Rake having no idea who he could trust. It's just about pure survival. But as the battle continues, as they move forward, well, it becomes less of a job. You know, it becomes secondary. It's not just Tyler Rake's life at stake. It's his soul.
Okay.
It's super fun, man. Like, it's, again, like the story, like, if it doesn't hold up to a lot of examination. But there are some really fantastic, like, I mean, probably five or six, like, legitimately awesome, like, separate action set pieces that take place over the course of the movie. And Hemsworth's a great guy for a movie like this because I still don't know if he's a good actor. I've seen him be good in movies, but I don't know, I don't think it's necessarily... I'm just not. Mr. Hemsworth doesn't have a ton of range.
No.
I'm going to go out on that limb and say that maybe he's not necessarily the most broadly gifted actor. But for a movie like this, where all he has to really do is look tough and be grizzled and know how to shoot a gun and fight dudes, like, he's great. Like, he's really legitimately great. The supporting cast, it's mostly unknowns, like a lot of Bollywood actors, like a lot of people I wasn't familiar with, but everyone's really good. Like, there's a lot of really talented actors in this, even though they're names that I certainly didn't recognize. Although there is one where our good friend and Theater at Monmouth veteran David Harbour shows up for a couple of scenes.
Nice,
he's fantastic in just the perfectly David Harbour-y kind of way. But yeah, it's 2 hours of shoot 'em up. Like, it's big and loud, and it doesn't ask anything of you except to just hang on and enjoy the ride. And honestly, like, sometimes, especially in these trying times, that kind of movie's kind of nice to enjoy.
All right, and then finally, I can't wait to hear what you think of it, because I'm looking forward to watching. I mean, you got me at Allison Janney, Hugh Jackman, and Ray Romano. Tell us about Bad Education.
Okay, so I'm always a little bit leery of these sort of based on a true story type movies, especially one like this, where the story, the basic gist is it's based on a New York Magazine article titled "The Bad Superintendent." And the basic deal is it's based on a real life embezzlement scandal that rocked a Long Island school district back in the early aughts. It's basically like it's a look at one of the largest public school scandals in American history. That was, funnily enough, first sort of brought to light by the actions of a student journalist, which is crazy. First things first, Rich, you talk about Allison Janney and Hugh Jackman and Ray Romano. Janney is great, as always. Ray Romano, we're going to all have to just accept the fact that the last 5 years have proved that Ray Romano is so much more than Ray Barone from Everybody Loves Raymond. Like, he's a legitimately gifted performer, I'm hesitant to even say this out loud. I'm not going to go so far as to say this is the best thing I've ever seen Hugh Jackman do, but it's easily top five.
Nice.
As far as performances from him. Like, he is outstanding in this movie. The basic gist is, back in 2002. The school district in Roslyn, Long Island, they're riding high. Their public schools have just achieved a national ranking of fourth. It's a huge deal, and it's a distinction that has this economic ripple effect through the entire region. Like, we're talking like real estate prices and all these things. Like, just like everything is sort of impacted by the rating of this school district. And at the forefront of the rise is this guy, Frank Tassone. And that's Jackman's role. He's the school superintendent. He and a fellow longtime administrator and sort of the financial leader of things. A woman named Pamela Gluckin, that's Allison Janney's role. They pushed the school towards the top of the rankings, and they're still climbing. Like, they're aiming to reach number one. But as it turns out, there are people in the superintendent's office who aren't necessarily being there are some sticky fingers. There are some hands in the till, as it were. And everyone seems pretty content to look the other way, but it all kind of starts to crumble when Pamela Gluckin's son, Jim, played by Jimmy Tatro, gets caught using the district credit card to buy a bunch of supplies for a home remodel. And so she gets busted. The school board, which is led by a guy named Bob Spicer, that's the Romano role, they come together after an auditor discovers a discrepancy of like $250,000 uncovered. The school board wants to go to the police, but Tassone kind of talks them down and is like, just reminds them of the repercussions if word gets out about how irresponsible they've been. Like, the rankings drop, and that means real estate prices drop, and then fewer kids get into Ivy League schools, and will the Ivies, like, look askance at performance going forward? And, it really just sort of, there's a lot more to it than just, the money. And so they basically tell Gluckin, okay, reimburse the funds and step down, and we won't bring the authorities into it. She does it, although she's, pretty angry about it. And a lot of that anger is aimed at Frank Tassone. Turns out there's a good reason for that. And that's, we learn a lot more about that as a young woman named Rachel Bargava, played by Geraldine Viswanathan, she's writing a puff piece about the schools. They're going to build a skywalk at a high school because that's what you did at Long Island high schools in the early aughts, is build skywalks. But she's writing a puff piece about it for the school paper. But then she starts to dig a little bit into the particulars. And the more she digs, the more she finds out that there's a lot of wonky stuff going on in the district's finances. And the stuff she's finding indicates that the malfeasance is about more than $250,000, a lot more. We're talking about multiple millions of dollars. And it also would appear that Pamela Gluckin is not the only high-level administrator who is heavily involved in this malfeasance, which brings us back to Mr. Frank Tassone. It all unravels. We watch this sort of house of cards start to tumble down. Just a scandalous amount of taxpayer money has made its way into different places. And Frank Tassone is a man who has a lot of secrets. And this situation is going to drag these secrets from the shadows into the light. And we're talking about some pretty dire repercussions when all is said and done.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Here's the thing. This is a movie that was just begging to be like a Lifetime-esque collection of like prurient details and salacious stuff. But the scandal's a framework instead of the focus, and so there's a lot more freedom to build a compelling narrative. And then you take into account the fact that everybody, top to bottom in this cast, is awesome. Like, everybody's on the top of their game, with Jackman leading the way. Again, it's subtler than what he usually does, but he's really, I wouldn't have expected him necessarily to be capable of handling all the nuance, but it's just very layered, and he just finds this great way to just sort of navigate the complexity of the character. I mean, it really is among the best performances of his career. Janney is great because she's always great. Romano is great. Just everybody is great. It's a smart, sharp movie, and the compelling real-life narrative is elevated by, just these phenomenal performances. Yeah, you should really check it out, Rich. You're really going
to
dig it.
Looking forward to a Bad Education. Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Pass the Popcorn. Alan, we thank you as always. Good luck with your continuing second career as a booze maker.
Yeah, fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, we'll look forward to hearing more about that when we check in next Monday.
Sounds good.
All right, blend well. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, buddy.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge here on Downtown.